This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Carm Capriotto here, the Automotive Aftermarket Podcast Guy. Now, you know, we repurpose every live Town Hall Academy as a listening podcast to ensure that you don't miss out. Now, if you want to watch this video from this episode titled Building Customer Trust, then head to my website, remarkableresults.biz. It's on the Academy page or on YouTube. Search for Carm Capriotto. You know, we all know building customer trust takes time, and it doesn't happen overnight. So when does it happen? Well, it starts with every single touch point you make with your customer, from marketing to the way your storefront looks and that first phone call. Every transaction inches you further in developing trust. Find out how to polish your business in this must-listen episode. Thanks to our sponsor, Shopware and Shop Marketing Pros, for bringing you this episode. Now, here's something to think about. How often do your advisors play phone tag? Every ring, every voicemail, you know, it's time ticking on a stall job. Shopware's digital communication is really as easy as the customer clicks yes. Find out more on the web at GetShopware.com. Is your marketing company sharing the same vanilla social media posts for you that they do for every other shop? Well, that's not how Shop Marketing Pros does business. They believe each shop is unique with its own story. Contact them on the web today at ShopMarketingPros.com. Hey, don't forget to follow, like, and share on social media. I can be found on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Let's jump into our panel. Here we are, Greg Bunch from Transformers Institute, business coach in the industry and owner of Aspen Auto Clinic. And it looks like you brought Ken Greffin here with us. Right, Ken?
Last minute invite, so I'm bailing him out, trying to make him look good.
He does a great job of making me look good.
Well, that's exactly why you hired him. President of Aspen Auto Clinic, 5 locations. Ken, you have a really tough job as it is running 5 locations, but then to work for Greg on top of all of that.
Yeah, I'm contractually obligated to say nice things in public, like on this webcast. After, when we're in the green room that you mentioned, I can give you some insight if you need it.
I would love to. In fact, let's schedule a call for later.
Yes, sir.
And again, a new voice to the show, Ken, and a new voice to the show, Sam Craven. I'm going to say this right, Sam, the Garage Isti from Houston, Texas. How are you doing, man?
Good. Wonderful to be here. Yeah, you nailed it. The Garage Isti.
The Garage Isti. Okay.
There we go.
So do me a favor. I found out in the pre-room exactly how the name came up. So tell us the story.
Quick story around the Garage Isti is Enzo Ferrari used to use the term Garage Istis or Garagistas to describe the upstart Formula One teams. And until those teams started to beat him, but those upstart teams were Lotus and Brabham and Mercedes and things like that. So those teams started to beat him. Then those teams also started to describe themselves as Garagistas. And so it's just kind of a term to describe the scrappy upstart team that really wants to win.
I love it. One of the most unique names in the industry. Look, internal, external customers, the trust has to be there. And if, you know, and I'm loving to use the word, Greg, client. Client sounds so much more important than the word customer. And I was thinking about this episode about trust, and I was thinking about, do I have friends that I trust? And if I have friends that I trust, can I find a business that I trust? And I found an article, guys. Here's Consumer Reports talking to people, consumers. It said, if you keep your car for many years, find a local independent garage that you can trust, which I find was interesting that they said independent. And then build a relationship by giving them repeat business. Now, if you stay loyal, they're bound to treat you right, which can be advantageous when it comes to those really expensive jobs. What's more, a good mechanic can lay out for you what work is immediate and necessary and what can be held off until you have more money. Greg, I find one of the things so interesting about this article was it said your mechanic. They didn't say your shop. They didn't say your service advisor. They said your mechanic. It just seems that the people that are writing about our industry don't really, I mean, I think it's right to say my mechanic. You know, my mechanic does this, my mechanic does that, but there's not many people that really meet the mechanic.
We did, at Transformers Institute, we actually did a survey of just general automotive consumer people, both male and female, had a good combination. and ask them, when you go to a shop, do you want to meet the person working on your car, or are you okay with, you know, the person up front? The statistics were 50-50. 50% of the people did want to actually meet the technician working on the vehicle. Then the other 50%, you know what, the guy up front, that's fine. So that's one of the reasons. Now, COVID has obviously thrown a rock in the middle of all this. But when this mess is over, and obviously before, you know, I'm a believer in the shop tour. And of course, you have to have a nice, clean shop to be able to show off. But, you know, hey, this is Joe. He's our ASC certified master technician, going to be working on your car. Joe, this is Sally. Sally's the owner of this Dodge Caravan. Let them be able to speak to them. Now, people are, I know what's happening right now to listeners are cringing, going, No. You do not want my person to meet so-and-so. So when you go through the hiring process, we look for technicians that have a personality that can engage and impress a customer. Now, does it happen 100% of the time? No, but we're trying to break down that barrier and build that trust. Because I know as a flat rate technician, I got in the habit of, it's just another piece of metal coming in and I just got to fix it. But when I met the family or met the owner of the vehicle, I internally did a better job on that person's car, knowing that that was the person that I met that's going to be driving this car. I did a little bit better effort when I saw who was actually driving the car.
The point is so well taken. What you said is there's people cringing out there because, oh, there's just no way I want my customer to meet my technician. So, as I think you kind of alluded to, upgrade or build the culture in the business that allows that to happen. Hire for that. Now, you know, we know technicians talk to cars. They don't talk to people. It doesn't mean that they can't say hi and they can't say, you know, we'll take great care of your friend here. Do you have a name for your car? And my daughter actually had a name for her first car for, I'm trying to remember what it was, Tracy. Maybe you can type it in Slack and let me know. But that is the intimacy that I think so many people have. Sam, I want to go to you because I loved one of your great talking points, and that was that trust needs to be built at every single touch point. Man, take us for a ride on that.
Greg, I loved what you were saying too, because one of the things that I try to do in my shop is break down that wall between what the mechanics know and what the customer understands. Because I feel like if a customer doesn't understand, they're not going to feel comfortable buying. And you can't really build that trust if they don't understand. But to the point, Carmen, what you were saying, I think it's so important that we build trust at every single touch point that our customer has with our business, from the Google ad that they see to the mailer that we send them to how they feel when they drive up to our location to how they feel when they open the door. It's just like, you know, my background's in real estate. I've only had a car repair business now for 7 months, but curb appeal is everything. How the person feels when they walk up to that house is exactly the same emotional roller coaster that someone's going to when they drive up to your building. One of the things that was really important for me when I was shopping for a location was, what do the roads look like on the way to my location? Is this a place that a mom and her kids are going to be comfortable driving to? And is it a place that's going to make that person feel comfortable from the time that they drive up? How you do one thing is how you do everything. So how your marketing piece works is just as important as how your follow-up is once the customer is left, to make sure that the job is done well. I stress to my team, and I put a lot of stress on myself, to manage the customer's expectation from that very first touch point to how we answer the phone, what our tonality is like on the phone, what kind of questions do we ask on the phone, how do we talk to them about the work that their car needs, how do we actually execute that work, and then if for some reason someone wants to actually see it for themselves, which we actually have quite often in our shop, we're a European place, so we have a lot of people who like to touch and feel and see for themselves, even though we have a DVI. When I bring that person out to their car that's in the air that the technician is working on, how does our shop look? Is our shop clean? Is it kept clean? Is our area clean? Do we have junk everywhere? Is it well lit? But then on top of that, how do the technicians look? How do the technicians talk to that client when they come in? To Greg's point, some technicians just don't like people. But because they're a thing people, and we can all be guilty of that at some point in our life. But then how do we train the technicians to that? If a customer's walking to the shop, even if they're with a service advisor, if you come within 6 feet of that person, make sure you say hello. Basic things like that, that you would never think to train a technician, is the kind of, comes down to culture, kind of what you talked about there in the beginning of CARM. But that's where a lot of the hard work goes into this. And I think a customer service business like we're in now is a game of inches. And every little bit we can do slightly better to create a better experience for our people makes it so much easier for us to build trust. Trust isn't built when you're like, hey, trust me, your car needs this. That's the last time to build trust. You want to build trust with everything else around it.
Are you a serial entrepreneur?
It depends on what you mean serial. This is my third business, I think.
Oh, maybe. All right.
I sold my real estate business a couple years ago, did some consulting between then, and decided to combine the two passions that I have, which is cars and, well, three, cars, customer service, and business, all into one, and to doing a business like this. So
cool. I mean, great to have you here after 7 months in business. I want some people that have been in business 7 years to listen to the things that Sam's talking about. No doubt. Are you working with Greg?
Yep.
Yeah, he's an absolute stud. I mean, he's doing more out of his shop than most guys do out of that take 7 years to build. He's built in 7 months. And that's why I wanted him on the show with us, because he really, truly understands this trust building with the customers and has been able to accelerate building a fleet of key droppers faster than most other shops I've ever seen.
Well, look, we just did a show on key droppers within the last 7 days. And Sam, great to meet you, by the way. I don't mean to do housekeeping work here on the show, but we have to have you back because I love your story. Ken, it's all about the little things to build trust.
Absolutely. When I joined Greg's organization in November of 2019, the first time I was in front of the managers, put up on the big whiteboard we have in our conference room, little things lead to big things, good and bad, right? So the little thing, you walk out, read a code real quick from somebody you fit into your day can lead to a pretty large repair. If you forget a little thing, it can lead to a very large complaint as well. So, you know, Sam hit on it, right? The communication from beginning to end, in the middle, just all the tiny little details of if somebody calls on the phone and wants to be towed to your store. I don't know how many times I've heard previously, and unfortunately, sometimes my guys did it early on. Was okay. Here's the tow truck phone number. We'll see you when you get here. Right. That's not the little things. We set that up. We make it convenient. We make it easy. You know, Sam mentioned briefly the DVI, the picture proof, the no update. If you tell them you'll call them back in 10 minutes. Call them back in 10 minutes, not 12, not 15, not 20. And it takes a minute to build that, but nobody wants that poor interaction with that customer. So it's real easy for that group to buy into.
The no update, can you go a little deeper?
You know, pick the repair 2 hours in. Maybe we haven't even looked at it yet. We call and let them know that there's nothing to tell you. We're still not sure. Stand by. I'm going to call you again in an hour and a half and update you again, even if there's nothing to tell. It just keeps that client, in the loop on what's happening. And they're not wondering. Now that waiting rooms are opening back up, at least here in Colorado, you sit somebody, you know, generally they have their phone, but 5 minutes of doing nothing feels like a lifetime. And imagine they're just pacing, right? They want their car, they want their stuff to work, and an hour and a half is an eternity to not hear anything.
To me, that no update is has got to be, guys, in the top five of building trust, even higher. How many times do we create the story that doesn't exist because we don't know what we don't know? Hey, what's going on with the car? I don't know. God, I'm sure. Wait a minute. The bill's going to be huge. And so you start making up all these stories. You make a movie in your mind as to, you know, what's going to happen. It's absolutely, absolutely huge. Greg, building rapport on the phone, how critical is that to building trust?
Going back to what Sam said, it's the most important, right? It's the beginning of that first human interaction. At Transformers Institute, we do a lot of phone training and service advisor training, and I'm trying to get a clip from, forget the show, where he's like, stop the madness, right? Because it's
Shark
madness.
Tank.
Yeah, Shark Tank. It's madness because, you know, you've got this poor person on the other end of the phone, and they're trying to call around and find a shop, and maybe they heard something good about you, or you know, they found you on Google or whatever, and they are looking for that person, just like if we were to call a doctor's office and say, wow, I got this really weird thing, I think I'm going to die, I've got cancer, and they say, you know what, I've treated that 100 different times, it's very minor, you know, don't worry, I'm going to take great care of you. you know, that your stress level is going to go from 12 down to 6 overnight. And so that's really the job of our service advisors or whoever's answering your phone, is to take that stress level down. Hey, you don't need to worry. You're in great hands. I'm going to take great care of you. There's a reason that we've won Best Mechanic 19 times in the last 20 years. We have, you know, experts that work on your Lexus, Porsche, whatever. You know, I can't wait to come down and meet you, right? I'm building that rapport, and I'm building trust, and I'm breaking down that wall of, we've done mystery shops. We've listened to thousands and thousands of phone calls, and it's like, gosh, darn it, no wonder our industry has a bad reputation, right? You hear them chewing food, you hear them being short, you hear them being rude, you hear them not answer the phone. The phone is so important, and it's that first point of contact to break down that barrier. And so I get in trouble from my wife from saying this, but, you know, and I don't mean it in a bad way, but I say, give good phone and you'll never be alone. You know, if you do well on the phone, you're going to have a busy job.
This is a family show, Greg.
I don't mean anything by it.
I know you don't. Sam, what are you doing on the phone side for your people to help build trust?
I feel like the best thing we can do on the phone is just make the person feel comfortable, like they've called the right place. One of the things that I stress the most with both myself and my service advisor, because we record all of our calls, and I listen to my service advisor calls, and I listen to my calls, and sometimes I listen to my own calls, and be like, man, that sucked.
But we can help you with that.
I know you can, and you will. But I love to be able to go back and listen to the calls, because you might think you just crushed that thing, and then you go back and listen to it and realize you just didn't. But one of the things I think builds trust the fastest is tonality and caring. What is the tonality that you bring to it? Because the person under that phone cannot read your face. And we've all heard the studies that talk, you know, it's more about how you say something than what you actually say. I mean, it's all the same. So the only tool that we have when we have someone on the phone is our voice and our tonality. And I think if you take that and you combine it with the fact that you actually care about that person and you talk to them and there's tonality in your voice and it seems like you care, and maybe you're saying it with a smile on your face, because sometimes we say things differently when we're actually smiling. Yeah, thanks for calling the Garage Eastie. What can I do for you? Versus, welcome to the Garage Eastie. What can I do for you today? I mean, you're saying the exact same thing, but your tonality is so different. You want it to sound like you're there, you care, and you're eager to help that person.
Boy, how true is that? Greg, I'm sure that, you know, in fact, by the way, you had just mentioned about the great training you have. I've actually had a chance once to sit in on one of Jason's great stuff. Great stuff. In fact, how many people that I have talked to that have been to Jason's class and said, we paid for the class in the first 2 weeks afterwards. In fact, I think just about any great training in our industry pays for itself in a short amount of time, because I think, like Sam says, we need that push to stop and remember. Tell me if I'm right or wrong, but we've had masks for so long, and to try to smile through, no one can see your smile when the mask is on.
See it in the eyes, yeah.
Yeah, they've got to see it in your eyes, so you have to. I was telling people, you've got to smile harder. What a great rule that would be, Sam, over the phone, smile hard. That could be a little poster thing on the phone.
Right. Yeah. I wanted to touch on something that Sam had said. And, you know, there's two things that one, you know, we're talking about the phone calls, right? So part of what Transformers does, we also do direct mail advertising. I've been a direct mail guy for 15 years. And one thing that I started with is I put my wife and I's picture on the direct mail piece. Clients responded, say, hey, if a guy is brave enough to put his family's picture on that, that's probably a guy I can trust. Because if you look at all the corporate, right, the Firestones and all those other guys, you have no idea who anybody is. Even one of my big competitors in town, I know who he is because of, you know, internal, but the community has no idea who the owner of that is. They think it's a big franchise. It's not personal. And so, you know, that's something that, again, whether we do somebody's direct mail or they do it from somebody else, you know, personalizing it, that's a trust building tool that gets overlooked. And we, for our clients, we do recommend them putting a picture of themselves on there. And of course, we all have the fear we're going to be out to dinner with our wives and somebody's going to come yell at us, say we screwed up their car and knock on particle board. That's never happened to me. But the second thing is we tell people, you know, how much are you spending on marketing? And I'm a believer in marketing. But before you go spending a ton of money on marketing is what Sam said. Listen to your phone calls. Are you really capturing the people that are trying to get in? Do you need to train on the word tracks? Do you need to train on tonality? Do you need to train on that smile? Get those basics done before you start pouring a bunch of money into marketing, and you'd be surprised what your car count can do just by working the phone that much better.
Hey, Carm here, and coming up, Greg explains the importance of consultative style selling versus transactional. I want to let you in on a little secret. Investing in a cloud-based shop management system could be the smartest purchase you make in 2021. Manual processes can really add up and cost your shop unnecessary time and money. Now, if you're writing out repair orders, you're wasting time. If you're chasing customers for approvals, you're wasting time. If you're manually calculating invoices or logging into multiple systems, you're wasting time. And if you're wasting time, well, then you're wasting money. Do me a favor, pull up Chrome, Safari, or whatever browser you use and type in getshopware.com. Click on the Book a Demo button in the upper right corner and check out Shopware's amazingly efficient software. Trust me, you won't regret it. Again, that's getshopware.com. Have you heard this before? If you need something, we're just a phone call away. But then when you need something and you make that phone call, nothing. Well, if you needed something from your marketing company right now, today, could you get their help? Or now that they've got your money, has the personalized attention just faded away? Well, we've all experienced something like this. If you want that to go away, I want to introduce you to my friends over at Shop Marketing Pros. Shop Marketing Pros is a boutique marketing company. Now, what that means is they're small. It also means that they know their clients because they communicate with them regularly. If you're tired of working with a big transactional agency who treats you just like another auto repair shop, well, it's time to talk to the folks over at Shop Marketing Pros. They are a real phone call away. Find them on the web at shopmarketingpros.com. Hey, Ken, you told me that part of developing customer trust is collaborative interaction.
They need to be part of the process. Otherwise, we're just telling them, right? It's just, here's what you need. Do you want it or not? The digital vehicle inspection helps that line by line. They can look through it with you, and their prioritization and their ability to ask questions of, like, when we hear, well, what do you think? That we've got them, right? That means they trust us enough that they're asking for our opinion, and it can be that quick. And if they're not ready for X, we tell them, no, you know what? You're not ready for that. You're about 8,000 miles away before the manufacturer recommends that. However, we need to pay attention to A, B, and C. We'll worry about D through G as you continue to frequent our business. But giving them the tools needed to make the decision. Now we're there to guide and help, and we do sell, right? I mean, that is part of the process of what we do, but with their input, they have to be in control. It's the choices are their own, right? We're the mechanism by which the information is relayed. But it's how we relay it that they can start to build that, you know, that they really could have ripped me for $2,000 more than what they charged me for. I like these guys. And if, you know, the old saying, if they like us, they trust us, they'll buy from us.
Ken, is the culture at Aspen such that if you say you have a couple of service advisors on the counter and one felt that the other one could have done something different or better, would they just say something?
100%. This team that we have here at Aspen is it's nothing short of amazing, and nobody is beyond feedback. I mean, I get yelled at when I do stuff wrong. If I'm helping out at the counter and the phone's ringing off the hook and I answer it and I forget one part of the line, they call me out, and as they should. Everybody has a level of success in this organization. Some are just starting, some have been here a minute, and we can learn from the bottom of the newest to the most seasoned, and they will share ideas. Hey, man, I overheard that call. Consider this next time. Consider changing this word to this, and consider saying, oh, it's just, instead of, oh, man, it's going to be this much. You know, it's just going to be X. So the the collaboration with the customers is one thing, and then within the group, I couldn't be prouder of who's in the stores with us right now.
You know, I think that's the operative word there, collaborative. We work together to make the company great. No doubt, Greg, you must have some incredible incentive programs for everyone to work together. Sam, transparency, the building, tightening up the gap between the customer and what we want to do for them, and you know, the knowledge gap. What do you mean it costs this much money to fix the car?
It's a difficult hill to climb a little bit. It's how do we get someone who just drives a car every day educated enough to make the right decision to repair their car? But as I tell my service advisors and my technicians when they're doing the DVI, it's not terribly difficult to explain someone with a video of a ball joint that's moving that shouldn't, to say, this is doing this and it shouldn't, or this is leaking and it shouldn't. We can typically help a customer understand that with that, but we can't do it unless we have pictures or video or whatever the case is. I stress my team a lot, and I have a few technicians that have come in that are not used to doing this DVI process. And in the beginning, I was getting a little bit of a kickback because of how long it was taking to do it, but they all understood our greater mission is to serve our community. Once they understood that, they really understood that if they take their time doing the DVI and explaining everything correctly to where our service advisors, who are the go-between, you know, we don't know as much as the technicians, but we know more than the customer. If you put all the information in there correctly, it helps everyone come to the same level and understand, to trust, to actually be able to make a decision. Because we don't make decisions if we don't understand. So once that happened too, the service advisors were able to sell better and the technicians were able to sell better because we were able to create the even playing field for our customers and our service advisors. It's been an interesting problem to try to solve. I mean, I'm new to this business, but I have always understood. I was the kind of guy that always liked to work on his own car until he never really realized, especially when I hired all these professional technicians, I realized I'm not very good at it, got into this business. And of course, I had some really great technicians to work on my stuff. That was the first problem I wanted to solve, which was how do we create a feeling of trust with what we do? And I think the only way to do that is to educate our customers on what their car needs and then put the power in their hands with the words from the technician of saying, hey, this is critical. We should take care of this right now versus, hey, we can wait on this. Let's monitor this in the future.
This whole thing with trust comes down to that key drop relationship, you know, fix it, handle it, whatever it needs. And those customers, help me understand if I'm right or wrong in my thinking, guys. Understand a couple of very important things, that the vehicle wears, it breaks down, it needs maintenance and diagnostics in order to try to figure out sometimes what's wrong, requires time and money and talent and technology to do it. How have we educated the key droppers to trust us to that level? And some people say, where's my discount? Is there a deal?
I don't know, Greg could probably speak to this much better than I can, but I feel like the key droppers come to you. You get the opportunity to grab the key dropper from that very first interaction. They're the ones that are going to be sold on the intangibles and a little bit less on the, hey, help me understand the details. Because I feel like our key droppers are like, especially after the first interaction, it's like, okay, I trust you. Whatever you say, just take care of it. I feel like you have to create the opportunity and you create the marketing piece and create the process of touches, of exceptional touches. How do you create that opportunity to attract that type of client that's going to increase your ARO and decrease your headaches? And I don't know if I'm an expert at that or even good at it yet, but we've managed to come out of the gate with a really high ARO and my headaches are relatively low. I've only had a couple customers be upset with us, and I think it just comes down to making sure we create that trust at every single touch.
I had a customer come in one time, and they said, I'm here because I called the dealer, and they wanted $100 just to pop the hood. You know, they said, hey, I got a check engine light, or whatever, and they said, okay, yeah, it's going to be $100. The service advisor did a horrible job explaining that it's not just popping the hood, that, you know, we're going to rack the car, we're going to do this and do that. So what we train and what we talk about on a regular basis is stop you know, I need $150 with the Diag, which I hate that word. It should be diagnostics, but moving that vocabulary to test procedures, right? We've all been in the medical system. We all know that we get charged for test procedures. So, you know, based on the code that your vehicle has, we need to do a compression test, a fuel pressure test, a lab scope on the whatever. People are going to respond, I think, better. And that's when selling diagnostics, that it's not just, you know, we're popping the hood for $100, but we're actually running certain test procedures to nail down exactly what the vehicle needs. And so that's one way to build that trust and then be able to provide test results. So, you know, with technology, a lot of the, you can email scope patterns, you can email code readouts. There's, you know, most of our scanners and alignment machines and everything, you know, there could be evidence that you can, you know, email to people. And some people are going to be into it. Some people are going to go, hey, don't worry about it. Just keep rolling. The other thing that is a trust building tool within the shop, and again, it's a little bit, you can use the DVI, which is what we've adapted. But, you know, again, I know there's probably a show out here about, you know, how much people hate waiters, but there's something to having a waiter in my waiting room that I can show them what's going on. And one of the things that we do is we do a fluid sample on every vehicle. And so when we bring that up to show the customer, and I've had technicians say, the car's got 6,000 miles on it or 10,000 miles. Why do we need to do it? Because you're building trust. And what I'm going to tell that person, see how bright and shiny this coolant is, this transmission fluid and all that. That's what brand new stuff looks like. As you continue to come here, and you put miles on your car, I'm going to show you this every time, and I'm going to show you that by 30, 40,000 miles, this fluid's not going to look the same, and we're going to know that it's time to do it. So it's that transparency from the very beginning, and they can literally see their fluid degradate and know that you're not trying to pull something on them, that they've watched the whole process unfold.
You know, Greg, the good fluids reminds me of a no update update.
When you get a call from the shop at 2 in the afternoon, what do people think? Oh, crap. They found something else that's going to cost me more. Hey, great news, Carm. The parts just arrived for your vehicle. John, our ASC certified technician, is doing the work on it. We're still good to go at 5 o'clock. Just want to give you a quick update that everything's rolling like I told you it would.
I love where we're going so far, and I've been motivated to ask this question because of where we are. Do we have a measurement in our company of trust? And I know that's a pretty heavy question, guys, but think this through. If I have key droppers, and those key droppers in my mind are the ultimate trust relationship of my client, have I ever recorded who they are, how we got there with them, and how we can continue to build them? And the more we get key droppers, that's the measurement of ultimate trust? Is that a way to look at it?
I mean, I have a hypothesis on this, but it's completely untested, and I have 7 months of data. But I feel like one of the best tests of key droppers or how we're doing at building trust is what our repeat business percentage is, or how much repeat business we're doing every single month. I have noticed, being all new and most of my business not being repeat right now, the different nuances that are driving people to come to us from their regular place. And it's been interesting to see. Sometimes it's something as simple as you're closer, but I think there is also something a little bit that they may not be mentioning if they say just you're closer. Sometimes it's, I love your DVI process. Sometimes it's, I love your website. Sometimes it's how you made me feel from start to finish. But there's someone that actually came in yesterday that had a friend that worked at another shop and still decided to come to us. And I'm asking myself, what drove this customer to bring their Mercedes to me, someone they have no idea who they are, versus their friend who's a mechanic at another shop? And it has to be like the subconscious or the intangibles or the like kind of what I've talked about again and again. There's just like the processes that we have in place for the constant touch points to gain trust with these customers. Something is broken down along the line and broken a little bit of trust. They could still like the person. They could still like the place. It's not always price. Sometimes it's price, but I am not the cheapest guy in town. I tell people I'm not the cheapest guy in town. I tell people, I'm going to give you the best value that you have. That would be kind of my hypothesis. And I'm saying that with the caveat of, I'm new and I don't know everything, but I'd be interested to hear, Greg and Ken, what your feedback is on that, since you have so much more industry experience.
There's absolutely some to what you're saying, Sam, but to get to the point where they throw the keys on the counter and walk off, do whatever it needs to do, off you go. It started with the first visit or the shop tour or being that the mechanic that's going to work on the vehicle made themselves available. All those little things that we talked about lead up to that. And sometimes it can be a 40-minute oil change in and out, because that's exactly what they wanted. They got exactly everything that they needed out of that particular visit. So when they come back for whatever it is, it's the same thing, right? Then the no update happens because it required a repair from the previous visit. And just all that upfront that we try to do with new and return, I think is what builds that. There's reports, right? Yeah, most of the business is percentage of return versus new, but it's really, really hard to quantify what started it, because it's hard to figure out what step along the way turned them into that key drop. But I think everything we've talked about is a gear towards that.
I remember when I very first moved from being a technician to a service advisor, my boss at the time had told me, he goes, look, when you're a service advisor, or excuse me, when you're a technician, there is a level of satisfaction that comes from, hey, the car came in broke, leaking, running bad, you got it fixed with your hands, your tools, your knowledge. There is an internal sense of satisfaction that comes with that. He said, when you write service, and this is back in the early 90s, he said, you know, the first time you sell a ticket over $1,000, right, you're going to be high-fiving and exciting because, you know, that feels like a great accomplishment. But at the end of the day, you're going to start selling those all the time. It was a Euro shop, and it's just going to feel like old hat. He goes, the satisfaction as a service advisor is really going to come from the guy that comes in and he's skeptical. He doesn't trust you. He doesn't trust mechanics. He doesn't want to spend the money. And he moves from that to being a key dropper. And I remember the guy. It was a guy with a Volkswagen Vanagon. He was rough. He was skeptical. He didn't trust mechanics. He was very verbal about it. And back in the day, the Vanagons, if you didn't change the coolant out, the head studs would rust out. And it was a big, nasty job. And we were trying to explain that to him. And, you know, we begrudgingly approved the job and did it and did some extra little things on him and traded him with extra special care. And I literally remember he walked back in and I'm like, oh, crap, here's that guy. And he's like, hey, you guys earned my trust. Here's my keys. Just take care of it. And it was like, that's what my boss was talking about, that feeling that goes into that. So I think it's important for us, you know, in coaching our service advisors that's the coup de grace, right? Everybody loves, you know, making the money and on commission and all that. But, you know, service advisors take that role because they like people, they want to help people, and rewarding that and talking about that, of how rewarding that is to truly win people over, I think needs to be talked about within our organizations.
Great, great point, Greg. Thank you so much for that. My daughter reminded me that she called her car, she had a Rogue, she called it Logan. And she said it was Logue the Rogue. And so anyway, just another hook for relationship building. Hey guys, this was really great. I want to call what I believe is last call right now. Anything that we didn't top, but that you guys wanted to say, but we didn't touch on. And we'll go around the room. Greg, I'll give you the last call. Ken, I'll give you the first call. Sam, you'll be next. Ken?
Building trust can also come from how you handle complaints, be it a Google review, just somebody at the counter that you can tell is not happy. And we have worked very, very hard over the past month that I've been here about quit going into resolution mode and go into recovery mode. It's great if we come up with, well, here's your refund, but you still hate us, right? We've gotten a resolution, but we've lost a customer. You know, the focus publicly, especially on Google and those other sites of if we damage something and harmed the relationship, we will put in that Google reply that you were 100% right. We've tried to reach out to you. We want to make this right, or we put the resolution in the reply. But the focus on recovery can build trust to people who are checking the Google reviews as well.
Very great, great, great point. Thank you. Hey, thanks for being here, Ken. Fresh new voice for the show. Always good to have that. Sam?
with my little bit of time, I just want to say, Carm, thank you for having me back on the or having me on the show for the first time. When I was starting to open up this business, thinking of doing this last year, my wife and I spent a lot of time on the road, and we listened to you quite a bit, much to her chagrin. So it was incredibly helpful for me to learn everything that I needed to join this industry. So, Carm, thank you so much, and Greg, thank you for having both for inviting me on. And Greg, thank you for taking me on as a client when I know I was being difficult. So
it's not me, Sam. It's everyone who comes on and contributes so that you learn. So, but thank you. Thank you for that. That was really kind. And Greg, I'll let you have last call, last word here.
Thank you. And Carm, it's been absolutely a joy and a pleasure to journey with you, seeing this cool technology, right, that wasn't here 4 years ago when we first did this, and to seeing what your program is doing. And you know, I've said this before, the reason I call Transformers Institute isn't because of the robots, even though I like the movies, it's really about transforming the industry. And so it's an honor to be a part of another organization that's also helping to positively transform the industry. So Carm, thank you. The importance of, and people have heard this term before, but really this is a good example of what I mean by that, and that is consultative style sales. You know, you got the used car sales, you got the, you know, hey, shove it down your throat, scare tactics, you have the franchise type stores, you know, their selling proposition is price, right? Yeah, we may not give you the best repair, we may not give you the best customer service, but gosh darn it, we're going to give you the lowest price, right? So, but a lot of our audience here is a relationship model. And the reason people go to an independent shop, number one, is for that relationship and that trust. And what I see happen in a lot of, and it's happened in our company as well. I'm not saying we're perfect, and we, you know, we're continuing to striving to train and get better as well. And that's making an assumption on a customer. And so what I mean by that is somebody comes in and their first interaction with us is, you know, they bring their car in for a coupon oil change, and it's an older car. It's a 96, whatever Camry. You try and sell them a few things and they're like, nope, I just want to keep this car on the road. So that's the car that, you know, maybe their teenage daughter's driving back and forth to school. And as long as it's not going to break down on the side of the road and it's just got to go 7 miles one way and 7 miles back, that's all they care about. Well, then now they bring their, you know, 2018 Chevy Tahoe that they absolutely love and adore in. And now I'm a service advisor and I've made the assumption, oh, that guy didn't buy anything on his Camry. He's not going to buy anything. I'm not even going to talk to him. Well, this is his baby and he wants to follow the factory recommended required services. If there's an extra service that's going to help him be, you know, keep this car longer and, you know, the throttle body cleanings and that kind of stuff, he's going to be all over it because this is his baby. And we try and sell to him, and we make that assumption that he's the same buyer that he was on the Camry. And the reason we do that is because we're going too fast, and we don't ask those qualifying questions. Okay, what do you use this car for? Is this your baby? You know, how long are you going to hold on to the car? Is this the one you commute with? And people will tell you, right? That's when you learn. No, this is Charlie. This is my baby. I'm going to keep this thing until it's 300,000 miles on it. And my next appointment, I'm going to get a ceramic coating and get the windows tinted on it. Well, that same person can have absolutely two different buying habits based on that vehicle. But if we don't use a consultative style selling technique, we are not going to know that. And we're going to treat him just like everybody else. And we're going to just become that average repair shop. So if somebody goes and they know what I want, a personalized experience, that's the place that I'm going to go to. They remember me. They know what my proclivities are. You know, there's a place that I go to breakfast with almost every Saturday. And, you know, when I sit down, coffee, cream, ice water with lemon. I don't even have to ask, right? She knows every single time what to bring, and I like that, right? And it's I pay a little bit more. It's a nicer restaurant, but you know what? It's my favorite place to go. They know what table I like, the one right by the fireplace. I've taken Ken there many times. He knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's a personalized experience. I feel special when I go there because they remember that about me.
Greg brings up such a great point about transactional versus consultative selling, or at least understanding the customer's tendency and or how should we approach the sale. Greg, it was 23 years ago that I read a book from an author named Neil Rockman called Rethinking the Sales Force. And it was all about that. And it really, really moved me. And I don't think in our industry we can stay away from learning and understanding these concepts. And I know, Greg, you're out there teaching them like crazy.
Super quick plug. I will be at Apex this year, and it's about a three and a half hour course on this exact topic. So if you've got yourself or an advisor that said, hey, they need to hear more of this. Join us at Apex. You're going to be there too, right, Carm?
For sure, I'll be there. I'll be inside of the Repair Central Joe's Garage. And I just recently wrote a blog for Apex. It should be out within the next 2 or 3 days. It's called The Homecoming. Hey, it was great to see Greg Bunch from Transformers Institute, Sam Craven from the Garagisti in Houston, Texas. I think I got it there. And Ken Griffin from Aspen Auto Clinic, 5 locations, president of Aspen. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too, Carm.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.